webcasting to the world live the good news of God's righteousness for all humanity. This is the Gospel Revolution Radio Network. Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein Online. It's Hump Day, Wednesday, September 23rd, 2009. The only September 23rd, 2009 in the history of humanity. Welcome in on this midweek edition of GKO. Glad to have you along for the ride. And it's been a historic day in more ways than one. Some good, some not so good. But it's always good to welcome the president and founder of the Gospel Revolution, Mr. Michael Williams, the Most Holy Reverend. Michael!
Good evening, Glenn. And yes, today is a special day, probably on many fronts, for those of you who remember and know, respect, and love my my former wife. She didn't like being called an ex-wife. I don't know why. But maybe it's like Marines. They don't want to be called ex-Marines. But anyway, today is her 60th birthday, which I'm sure she'll be just so happy that I announced that to the whole world. So,
Hazel.
Hazel.
Hazel Williams.
Our one and only Hazel.
Who's still
60 years old today. I told her on the phone today, I said, you know, I said, now I know why we got a divorce. And she said, why is that? I said, because I would never be married to a 60-year-old woman.
Sure, she appreciated that, Michael.
Well, we do have that kind of humor between us, so it was good. It was fun.
Well, we've got lots to talk about tonight, all gospel-related, and we invite you to join us at 1-800-436-3260. Get in early and often, 1-800-436-3260. We've got some emails to deal with, and you're always welcome to email us your questions and comments at webcast@gospelrevolution.com, webcast@gospelrevolution.com, whether you're listening live or, as most of the folks do, on the archive. That's the way to get in touch with us. If you're listening, and it's Wednesday night, and it's a little after 9 o'clock on the East Coast of the United States of America, you're listening live, and we would love to hear from you. That's the toll-free number. Sean O'Halloran waiting in the studio, 1-800-436-3260. Memorize, put it in your speed dial, 1-800-436-3260. So there was some crazy stuff going on at the old United Nations today.
Yeah, some crazy people.
We had Muammar Gaddafi, who was allotted 15 minutes of speaking time, spoke for 95 minutes.
Yeah.
They didn't. He did not respect the time limitations, as he has not respected a lot of things over the years.
Yeah,
but that was just
surprise, surprise.
Craziness.
Yep.
What did you say?
I said surprise, surprise that he didn't respect
that was just that was entertaining from the standpoint of just how bizarre it was.
Boy, it was for sure.
And then tonight, the president of Iran, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, say that fast three times.
Mm-hmm.
He spoke, and it was amazing, Michael, as I watched that and listened to the translation. It, how much of his diatribe could have easily been heard at many evangelical churches.
Really? See, yep. I missed him. I didn't listen to all of Gaddafi. I don't know anyone who could, but I did hear him on occasion and flipped to different channels while he was speaking so eloquently. Ahmadinejad, I totally missed him altogether.
Well, he talked about the importance of returning to basically biblical values.
Ah.
And the importance of embracing the holy messengers of God, which he starts out with Adam and leads his way through to Noah and Abraham and Moses and Jesus and Muhammad. Mm-hmm. Bless his holy name, or whatever they say. After they say Muhammad, they always have to say something else. They can't say Muhammad. Anyway, he finishes with the explanation, basically, of their end time doctrine.
Really?
He's proclaiming from the platform of the United Nations. And he said that Jesus Christ would be coming back with the Muslim Messiah, that is the last imam. It was really quite remarkable. And
Jesus,
he talked about that the countries of the world and the people of the world have got to set the stage for this great end-time event.
Uh-huh.
And they, like evangelicals believe, is that this imam is going to show up after a cataclysmic world war, a disaster.
Yeah.
And if there's any guy that probably should not get his hands on nuclear weapons, it's probably this guy. Because he's, I mean, this was brazen. I mean, this was, he is not hiding anything. By the time he got done talking, most of the delegates had left the hall in New York. The only ones that seemed to be left were some African nations and obviously some nations from the Middle East, but the United States had long left, and they did show, actually, I was surprised, they showed many of the delegates walking out. But, you know, as far as for our discussion, it just points to the brazenness and the boldness of the fundamentalist Muslims. A evangelical Christian president, like George W. Bush was, for example, would never come out and say that Muslims likely are more proud of their end-time doctrines than the evangelicals are.
Yeah, of course, if we'd have had an evangelical that was that had risen to the top, such as Pat Robertson, you could be assured that he would have done some sort of situation that you heard from Gaddafi, for sure. But this was from Ahmadinejad. But yes, thank goodness that we've not had anybody in office that embraces to that degree the evangelical rights belief system. I mean, that's been one of our salvations, has been our freedom from someone who is of the ilk that preaches that type of message.
Now, on the other hand, could you imagine if a world leader, especially a world leader of note, came to understand the gospel and was able to stand up and with great clarity proclaim all humanity being righteous before God, regardless of what they believe or don't believe? That would
be... And even if we had someone to do that and not proclaim a particular religious belief, whether they believed in Muhammad or Jesus or whatever, I mean, I think that the... it would, I mean, we've seen what conversation it creates when this is introduced to any of the circles that you or I have been involved in, and you can only imagine what kind of response and at least talk it would bring so many people of any religious persuasion to, for sure.
I remember one time I had a chance to... speak to my brother's synagogue at their Sunday school, and the people were fascinated by the lack of accurate interpretation by the evangelical community.
Yeah,
and you know, this kind of dovetails into the coming convention. I was talking to Dawn the other day about the topic of the convention, and the book of Hebrews being taught from beginning to end. Here is a book of the Bible that is had so many verses pulled out of context to condemn the world. And Dawn said that, well, it's important to get a more accurate translation than the King James Bible. And I said, no, even the King James Bible, that is a poor translation of the original text, when read in context, proclaims the redemption and salvation of the whole world through Jesus.
You know, that's the powerful thing about the truth of the Scriptures and of the Gospel, is that when you find anything that is an attempt to explain that, no matter how many times it's been translated or how poorly each time it has been translated, the big picture always comes through. And if you allow the big picture to do for each and every verse what it does, and the revelation of the Scriptures to do what it does, things especially like the book of Hebrews just absolutely comes to life. And you're right, there has been more out of context, painfully implemented, harsh doctrines imposed upon the Christian community out of the book of Hebrews of any place that I know.
Can you give just one example and how, when read in context, it totally changes the meaning of the verse?
Well, there are so many, but one that is of particular importance to me is the one about chastening and scourging of the Lord in chapter 12 of Hebrews. Is it chapter 12 or chapter 11? About the chastening and scourging of the Lord, that entire chapter goes into great detail as to why the Hebrews should not be going back to the old customs of the old covenant. They were wanting to return to a lot of the ceremonial portions of the old covenant, and Paul, the writer of the book of Hebrews, my persuasion, was trying to explain to them why they should not embrace even one single Methodism, if you will, of the Old Covenant, not one single ritual, because if they did, this was what they were also embracing. And they were wanting to go back to washings and purification and many of the ritual rites for righteousness. And his appeal to them throughout the book of Hebrews is these are the reasons you should not go back to that, because along with that comes this mentality. And one of those mentalities that he addresses so strongly is the issue of chastening and scourging. And where the church has taken these verses out of context, nobody can quote those verses in context. But out of context, everyone is absolutely convinced that God chastens and scourges everyone whom he loveth. Now, because they don't really believe that God would scourge anyone, which means beat to pieces, they forget that word and they go to the chastening. And they say, well, that term chastening means to correct. So now they've got God correcting you on every side, but if you wind up with your child with a disease, it's the chastening and the scourging of the Lord. It's the chastening of the Lord. That's how they explain everything that happens that's outside of the realm of what they think is supposed to happen. But the awesome reality of that chapter of Hebrews is that it explains that that is not what we are under. This is not the way that God does it now, and that's why you should not go back to practicing old covenant ritual, is because you're going to be embracing the understanding that comes along with those rituals if you go back under the law, you're going to go back to believing that there is a God who's there waiting to punish you. And the awesome thing is that in the gospel and the revelation of the scriptures and the gospel, I love speaking of the scriptures and the gospel, because the gospel simply reveals the scriptures, and the scripture foretells the gospel. It doesn't mean that the scriptures confirm everything that's in the New Testament, but everything in the New Testament has to be looked at through the light of the scriptures. Everyone knew that during Paul, Peter, James, and John's time. Whether they got it right or not is another thing. But everyone was expected to look at everything about the cross and about the gospel through the prism of the scriptures. And instead, you know, we've got this standard, you know, we've got the religious community in this country establishing righteousness as some religious standard against gays, against abortion, or whatever the theme may be, or trying to get the Ten Commandments put in courtrooms and schools, and it's totally missing the point. And that would be my appeal to Christians in the U.S. today, Glenn, would be the same as Paul's appeal to the Hebrews. That's why this is so pertinent to our time, because the appeal to Hebrews would be the very same appeal that Paul would be making to America. You could change the name of that book to The Americans. This is the reasons why you should not be stepping back into the law, because these are the things that you are now going to also include in your belief system, which are wrong.
Right, and also we can rehearse the fact that when John baptized Jesus in the Jordan River, the proclamation came out that, behold, the Lamb of God, and the love of God that was proclaimed at that event, that God was well pleased,
yes,
with Jesus at that point. And it was Jesus that took the scourging and the chastening of the Lord.
As the scriptures foretold. As the scriptures foretold.
Right.
The chastening that he took upon himself, our chastening was upon him. And how that we can misread that, I don't know. But the scriptures foretold it, that our chastening would be upon him. And as Isaiah proclaimed it so very deftly and accurately, that Jesus would be taking all the scourging for us, and all the chastisement would be upon him, and then the gospel, especially where Paul preaches it in the book of Hebrews, is designed to explicitly reveal that to people who are tempted to go back under the law.
Well, these guys had gone back under the law. I mean, they never really left.
No, that's very true.
Many of the Levitical practices, we know that they were going to the temple to offer animal sacrifices.
Absolutely.
Even Paul himself had Timothy circumcised. So this is a major issue, and we're going to be talking more about this later on in this broadcast, as well as future shows, because it is going to be a major theme of the upcoming Gospel Revolution Convention in Houston in November. But before we do that, we want to welcome online, calling from Stafford, Virginia, Mr. Germa Colson. Germa!
Good evening, Glenn.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
We're doing wonderfully on this September evening. How are things in Virginia?
Doing pretty good here in Virginia.
Good.
It's really fun listening to you guys. And Mike Williams, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Germa. Thank you for asking, and it's good to have you on with us tonight.
Germa, you know, a lot of people would question your sense of fun if you find this fun, but we understand because we find it fun too.
Yeah.
No, it is fun to real, especially when having been for so many decades locked up in legalistic Christianity, to understand the reality of the finished work of the cross.
Oh, absolutely.
So what's on your mind tonight?
But, I got a question for Mike, actually.
Excellent. Fire away.
I was wondering if I could get, Michael, if I could get your analysis on Jesus was saying in Matthew chapter 7, verses 21 through 23 about when he says, like, to some he's going to say, I never knew you, and, depart from me, and all that stuff.
Yes, of course. That fits in the category with the sheep and the goats, and the separation of the wheat and the chaff. It all of those things fit in the same category, the separation of believer from unbeliever. And all of those were things that Jesus had already set the prerequisite. And you got to remember that when Jesus said this, he had not gone to the cross yet, Germa. And so when Jesus said that, you must first off take into consideration that he was still implementing the very last rule that mankind would be under, according to the book of John, which goes into it with incredible depth. And implementing the very last rule that he was to prove that the human race, even his 12 chosen, could not keep. And so here he is with this message, again, almost like Moses did to the Hebrew people, and gave them laws that he knew they would fail at. And then, of course, Jesus gave them, whittled it all down and said, you must believe. And then, of course, proved beyond the shadow of a doubt that they could not, even the disciples, the 12 disciples, could not believe. So this was a part of Jesus letting them know that the requirement to believe also had its consequences in punishment and separation from God, just the same as the law did. You see, the law threatened alienation and separation from God, and also believing threatened alienation and separation from God. So here you have both of these parties from Jesus and from Moses bringing the entire planet, and especially through the disciples, especially through the chosen of Israel, proving through Israel that the law for righteousness was not achievable, and then Jesus proving that the requirement for believing was not achievable, even under the threat, and keep in mind, the very same threat that disobedience to the law held. That the law held the threat of punishment from God and alienation and separation, and believing also held the very same threat.
The lack of belief held the very same threat. The perfect belief, by the way, the perfect faith.
Yes, and you had to do exactly like the law did. It said you not only had to obey all of the law, you had to obey it perfectly. You couldn't just believe. You had to believe perfectly. You had to never doubt, not ever a thread or shred of doubt, because he that doubteth is damned. And I love that verse. That verse used to terrify me, and that's in, he that doubteth is damned. I think it's in the New Testament. It's in the New Testament. I think it's in the Gospels. For he that doubteth is damned. Now I love that verse. The very same reason that I love the law. I love the law because I know that I cannot use the law to bring me righteousness or union with God or peace with God or favor with God. And because I know that he that doubteth is damned, I now know that I cannot use my own belief to secure my confidence that I am at one with God, that I'm righteous before God, the very same as the law. So we have Jesus teaching a requirement to believe, the final great law, if you will, the final requirement that the human race was never going to be able to measure up to, and he even attached to it the very same consequences that the law had. And what did the 12 disciples do? They all turned away from him in unbelief. Every single one of them, before he went to the cross, had turned away from him. In fact, the New Testament says they turned every one unto their own way. And we know the examples of those who not only turned and went their own way, but they openly defied the knowledge that Jesus was the Christ. They openly defied it. Thomas said, I will not believe. Thomas didn't only say, I don't believe. He said, I won't believe. I refuse to believe. And Peter denied him three times with cursings to prove that he did not believe in Jesus at all. And this was the final hurdle that Jesus was elaborating on, that his sacrifice would totally eliminate. And Paul elaborates on it a bit in Romans chapter 12. And he says, for when God concluded them all in unbelief, that is the point when he redeemed the world.
Okay, that's very interesting. It's also interesting that you brought up about how you now, you know, you love those verses about that doesn't believe. Because I absolutely love those verses when Paul talks about certain people that, you know, that wouldn't get into the kingdom of God, and those verses used to terrify me, but now I love them because now I know what he's referring to. It's like he's not talking to us; he's talking to, you know, the old creation. That is, the old creation could never make it. It had to be crucified with Christ.
Yes.
And now the new creation now has been birthed out of his resurrection.
Mm-hmm. And yes, it absolutely has. So the understanding that we get out of that through the teaching of Jesus is that, like I said, was the comparison that Moses did with the people of Israel, was letting them know your obedience is not going to do it. And what do we have the Christian community telling us now? It's your obedience. You've got to obey. And then Jesus comes along and lets us know your belief is not going to do it. Nothing you do, not your obedience or your belief, will ever bring you union with God. I am the only one who can do that. And the thing of it is that, you know, I'm very glad to be able to announce that message to everybody who will listen, and that is your belief, your faith, your obedience is not what it takes to bring perfection in the eyes of God. What it takes to make you perfect in the eyes of God has already been done. Chill. Get a life. Live your
life. Just rest.
What was that?
As a just rest.
Yes, rest. I think that's the way that Paul put it, just rest. And, people can have a life if they can stop thinking that they are under impending punishment from God. They think that, you know, that God is against them, God isn't with them, God isn't for them. And all of those things are completely untrue. And the thing of it is, it's true in the life of every human being that lives and breathes on the face of this planet. And what Christianity has done is deceived the world into thinking that because they are believers, that they are the ones who are the ones who have this favor with God. And it just simply is not true. The life of a person who is a believer is, as far as incidents happening in this life, is really no different from anybody else's. Now, how we are able to handle those things and how we're able to view them can turn out a whole lot different, but the declaration that if you become a believer, all of these good things are going to happen and no bad things are going to happen, it just isn't true. Life goes on just the same way as it did before. Now, people ask me, well, do you advocate that people become believers? Yes, I do. But it's not so that you can be accepted by God. It's so that you can know that you are accepted by God. Because you're no less accepted before you believe to when you after you believe. There is no difference. And that is what the entire law and the teachings of Jesus were designed to do, is to let us know there's no difference in any of us. It doesn't make any difference if you pimp, prostitute, or president. It makes no difference whether or not you're a priest or a prophet. It makes no difference.
We were
all exactly the same.
Let's see, pimp, prostitute, president, priest, prophet, professional.
What is that, the four P's, pimp, prostitute, president?
I think it's five P's, actually. You know, one thing, Girma, is that you got to, whenever you read some of those tough verses with Jesus' teaching, is remember that Jesus was the Word made flesh. And he literally was the law.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes,
he came teaching the law the way it was supposed to be taught. And Jesus rebuked the Pharisees for many reasons, but one of them was because they had watered down the law. They had made it somewhat livable.
Yes.
To this day, where even Jewish people, although they know they cannot live Levitical law, they still think that living a certain way under the dietary restrictions and the restrictions on the Sabbath somehow earns them favor with God.
Mm-hmm.
And as Michael has said many times, Jesus should have been the last teacher of the law.
Absolutely.
That was his point. And we know from Paul's understanding that the law was given to add power to the temptation, to cause people to be even worse in their actions and their attitudes towards God than they would have been without the law ever being given to Israel.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And so here comes Jesus making sure that there's no doubt that there is going to be nobody who measures up except for him at the day of the Lord, which was the day of the cross at Golgotha.
Mm-hmm.
That's Golgotha's secret, as one of Mike's teachings so eloquently put it. But any tough teaching from Jesus can almost be guaranteed to be narrowed down to the fact that he was teaching the law the way it was intended to be taught and understood, thereby condemning all those who would... Why do you think that so many people who were gathered because of his miracles left after he got done teaching? According to Benny Hinn and Rodney Howard Brown and so many other people, the cast is of thousands and millions of people, that the reason for the miracles is to draw a crowd to Jesus. Jesus drew them to himself by the thousands in order to hear his message of condemnation.
Yes, very good, Glenn.
And what did they do? They left, completely screwed up, completely confused. It works. The law works. Any amount of legalistic understanding on any situation causes people to at least want to do the exact opposite of what is being taught by the law.
And I have to say, I have never in my life heard anyone draw those conclusions that you just did, Glenn, as far as bringing them out with such clarity. And it's absolutely true. And I'll have to repeat that many, many times. But that is very, very true. And that type of insight is the kind of insight we absolutely have to see to debunk what the world has been fed as far as Christianity is concerned. you know, it's absolutely amazing that we get on here and we are people who totally believe in Jesus Christ, but we don't believe in much anything that Christianity holds up. It's absolutely bizarre. And that's the reason people are drawn to what we're doing is because that it resolves so much of the conflicting information that is heard. It doesn't make any difference whether it's Catholicism or Protestantism or which one it is, of the breakdown between all of those groups, which there are thousands, of course, many, many thousands of them, that basically are in existence because they take one particular rule and exalt it higher than the other. Well, the only thing we're doing is taking the reality that Jesus Christ is Lord of all. Not can be Lord of all, would be if you obeyed, could be if you believed, but the simple truth that Jesus is Lord over all. And that means you don't have to fight or struggle about your relationship with God. You don't have to try. You are loved exactly the way you are. You are accepted exactly the way you are. There is no need to change your life to be acceptable in the eyes of God. You're perfectly acceptable because of the one that we're all supposed to love and respect because of what he did. And all Jesus normally winds up becoming is another statue, another icon in a religious world that is to be revered and respected as something that we are supposed to try to attain to or reach for. But we were reached for. We don't have to reach after. We have been reached after, and we have been apprehended. We have been taken captive to the love of God. And no one on this planet has to put an effort forth to do that. That's the reason that my effort is to try to let people know that, so that they don't have to think that their life has to be spent running from God. You know, in the gay community, so many people in the gay community don't want anything to do with God because they believe they had to choose between God or gay. They heard in their churches, if you're gay, you can't know God. Well, that's just a lie. It doesn't make any difference what somebody is. It doesn't make any difference who they are. It doesn't make any difference where they live. We've all become absolutely equal in the eyes of God through Jesus Christ. And that's what makes him Lord of all. Not Lord of some, but even as is declared by Paul, that Jesus is Lord of all.
That's good news, Doug Irma. Very much good news. I love hearing it.
Well, keep on listening and calling any time, all right?
Yeah, I'd just like to say one thing before I go.
Sure, go ahead.
About believing, it's like, believing is profitable to save us from a wasted life, but it can
Absolutely.
Never save us from hell.
What a profound statement. I agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah, well, you guys keep up the good work, and hopefully I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for calling in. Try to come to Houston in November.
I'm sorry, say that again, please.
I said thanks, and try to come to Houston in November.
Yeah, thank you, and I'll try to get out there, meet y'all.
We'd love to have you.
Yeah, okay, take care. Bye.
All right, there's Irma Colson, ladies and gentlemen, from beautiful Stafford, Virginia. Now that opens up a line for you at 1-800-436-3260. Still plenty of time to get in this evening. 1-800-436-3260. Sean O'Halloran waiting to take your call. I'm going to repeat it another time, because you can just see how that kind of input spurs us on to some great conversation.
It does. Those questions are awesome.
Yeah, that we wouldn't have had otherwise. 1-800-436-3260 is the toll-free number. This is Glenn Klein Online, Michael Williams, Gospel Revolution Night. Hope you are enjoying it. Well, I mean, Germa said it was fun. He thinks this is fun.
Well, I tell you, everybody's time was worth it just to to listen and to hear the one statement that you made, Glenn, that the reason for miracles. I've never heard a better reason for miracles in my entire life. I've never heard such an explanation. And I think it's far more accurate than anything I've ever said or heard before myself.
Well, you know, a good friend of mine is a guy named Sid Roth, who is pretty well known. He's got a internationally heard radio show, and he's on.
Yes, I've been on his show before. Before I fell.
Yeah, at one time, Sid's best-selling testimony tape was your testimony.
That's exactly right.
Of how
on
God
his radio
delivered
show.
You from homosexuality. And so anyway, Sid does a show on television that I was somewhat instrumental in developing because I've stayed at Sid's house, and I was kind of his protege at one point. And he's got a show on television called It's Supernatural. It's Supernatural. And Sid's whole thing is all this paranormal and spirituality occurrences that he would call supernatural occurrences, paranormal circumstances, is to draw people to Jesus.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, Jesus did all the things that he did to draw people to him to hear the law.
Yeah, that was his job, so it's absolutely reasonable.
This is what happened. It's a matter of historical record. If you take any historical perspective from the Gospels, that Jesus did these miracles, he left them with their head spinning because he laid down the law. Once he got their attention, he didn't get their attention in order to be redeemed, in order to be saved. He got their attention so that on the day of the cross, there would be nobody left believing. And guess what?
Man,
it worked.
That's good stuff. I tell you, hats off. That's amazing.
Well, we haven't said this for a while, but good preaching, Roberts.
That's for sure.
All right, we got this email in from Jeff Robertson. He says, "Hey, guys, listening live tonight, I'm glad I publicly proclaimed on your show that when I, under condemnation, decided all I needed to do was believe in Jesus and what I had done naturally all my life since childhood I could no longer do. I went through hell when I did that until finally the words, 'It is finished,' came to mind one morning that I went back to the gospel." And he says, "All love, Jeff Robertson."
That's awesome.
Thanks, Jeff. Much appreciated.
Yes, Jeffrey, we appreciate it.
Jeff emailed us at webcast@gospelrevolution.com, which you can do anytime, day or night, and we'll get to your emails and questions as they come to us, webcast@gospelrevolution.com. But right now we want to hear from somebody who's listening live. It's about 20 minutes to 10 o'clock on the East Coast of the United States of America. So you should call us at 1-800-436-3260. You could see how Gurma's question and his participation was a huge benefit to this effort. Now we want to hear from you. 1-800-436-3260. All right, so I hate to bring this up, but I'm going to do it anyway. This story in from Florida. Here's a Florida man, Michael, that admitted to reporters that he killed his wife and his five innocent children, adding that he wants to be executed right away so he can be buried with them on Saturday. Misak Damas, 32 years old, said he wanted to take his own life but did not have the courage to go through with it because, quote, "If you kill yourself, you're not going to go to heaven."
Wow.
Damas made the statement to a Naples Daily News reporter as he was being led into a Haitian police vehicle in Port-au-Prince. Damas was returned to the United States late yesterday following his capture in Haiti. Damas faces 6 counts of premeditated first-degree murder in the deaths of his wife and the couple's 5 children. The 6 bodies were found Saturday in the family's North Naples, Florida home after relatives called police saying they had not heard from them. Asked by the reporter in Haiti why he killed his family, Damas responded, "Only God knows." Questioned further, he blamed the crime on his mother-in-law. "Her mom pretty much made me do it. The devil, her spirit, whatever she worships." Damas also added, "When I did it, my eyes were closed, but right now my eyes are open." He repeatedly asked the reporter, "Do you believe in Jesus Christ? Do you believe in Jesus Christ?" And he stated, "The devil exists."
Wow. I did not know that about that story, Glenn, from Florida. I had heard about the horrible murders of that family of five, but I did not know that. That's amazing.
Again, we lay the blame for that type of behavior at the feet of a concept that would say, let's just take, Michael, his one statement that if you commit suicide, you don't go to heaven. That's
right.
In the church.
Yep.
I mean, when Oral Roberts' son committed suicide, he had to get a divine revelation to understand that his son went to heaven even though he killed himself.
Yes. Yeah, and defied every thing that he'd ever been taught in church, but he was certainly willing to believe it because his son was the one that committed suicide, so getting him into heaven was important. It's amazing how that you can have revelations separate from what you've been taught in church when it just don't fit, even if you are an internationally famous evangelist.
So what are you going to do with that? I mean, here's a guy who, see, the end of the law brings death. I mean,
yes.
Sin produces death. And when you are so wrapped up in sin consciousness, you may not kill anybody physically, but both personally and relationally, you're going to have some serious death occur in your life.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's definitely death to an awful lot of things that I've certainly watched that. I mean, just the mind shift change that I've had, it's been amazing. And the one thing that I can say with all honesty is that in none of those places where I was thrown out of the churches or barred from coming back, or the relationships with the minister of the church, I never ever broke those relationships or those friendships at all. It was always them. They had to bring death to everything around them that did not agree with their form. And as anybody knows, we defend everybody's right to believe anything they want to, but it also behooves us to point out the fact as to what beliefs bring death and what beliefs bring life to a situation, and especially to the heart. You know, because I totally embrace that this is strictly a heart issue. This doesn't have anything to do with your health, your finances, or any of those things. It has to do with the heart. And the diversion, almost tactic, if you will, to try to take focus off of the reality of the issues of the heart is to emphasize finances or health or something else as being the object or the goal of believing. It's an incredible diversion, and when you focus on those things and you get diverted away from anything about the gospel, then these type of things is going to be the result. And you are absolutely correct. I agree with you 100%.
But we don't know if this guy's mother-in-law was, you know, he went to Haiti. We don't know if she was into voodoo or whatever. But
yeah.
Even if she was, the concept that demonic influence would have had him do something like this, again, that comes from mainstream, mainline, denomination,
absolutely.
Catholicism, Protestantism. But now he's repented. He wants to die for his crimes, and he wants to go to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's going to go to heaven, but not for the reason that he thinks he is.
Well, that's for sure. That is for sure. And can you imagine the agony that could have been avoided in this situation had there not been such distorted issues of guilt and judgment in the heart? I mean, that is the true apex of all of this stuff.
As crazy as he was to do this to his wife and their five children, he was conscious enough not to commit suicide.
Yeah.
Because he was concerned that that would send him to hell.
Not
the killing of his kids and his wife.
Oh, and I'm sure that in the process of this murder, one of the things that he entertained, even as the woman who killed her children, trying to get them into heaven, make sure that they didn't grow up in sin, all of these were very young children under the age of what the church calls the age of accountability. And if it does not come out that that was one of his motives in completing this heinous crime, especially after the comments that you've told me about, I would be very, very surprised.
Well, we've got some good news following that, ladies and gentlemen. You do not have to be condemned for anything you've ever thought, for anything you've ever done. As far as God is concerned, there are laws of the state of Florida and the United States and Canada and Australia and Singapore and wherever you happen to be listening. There are laws of your state, of your country. That's between you and the government. But as far as God's government is concerned, he has already proclaimed all citizens. That means everybody. Not guilty.
Absolutely.
And it's our strong conviction that as you saturate in that thought, that salvation occurs to your heart, your soul, and your mind. And Michael, why don't you just go over for folks that haven't either heard it before or haven't heard it for a while, the difference between redemption and salvation?
Well, that is a very important difference, the difference between redemption and salvation, and that is that without man's knowledge, without man's effort, without man's belief, redemption, which is the reunifying of God and the human race back together as one, took place without man's belief, without man's obedience, without man's participation, without man's observance. No one had to observe it, know it, understand it, believe it at all. This was a work that, according to the prophets, was arranged in an agreement between God the Father and God the Son, in which he agreed to do the necessary work that would bring righteousness to the entire planet. And not a righteousness that is based on performance or works, but a righteousness that is based on love. And that righteousness would be bestowed upon every human being, regardless.
You know, one can argue, Michael, that Jesus' earthly ministry before the resurrection was a ministry of proclaiming the law and keeping that agreement and that covenant between Christ and the Father hidden.
Absolutely. And
it really wasn't until Paul got the revelation of God's grace. Here's a guy that never saw Jesus.
Absolutely.
In the flesh, that we know of.
Yep.
It wasn't until his understanding of the grace of God, the unconditional acceptance of God through grace, and the peace that procured, that we understood that. We're still learning it today.
Yes, and it is Paul that introduced us to the issue of salvation. And Paul's terminology about salvation is never, ever, ever gaining righteousness or redemption.
Or favor.
Or favor with God. The issue of salvation, Paul spoke of as the saving of the soul and the saving of the mind and the soul, the renewing of the mind and the saving of the soul. And the soul is that part of us that thinks, that reasons things out, that feels, that has emotion. And that is the soulish realm of us. And Paul said that embracing this already made true redemption, this already made real righteousness, that by our embracing that reality, it had the ability to save, if you will, the way we think and the way we feel in pertaining to relationship to God. That you don't have to go around judging other people, and neither do you have to go around feeling guilty in the eyes of God. And my goodness, what a different world it would be. I mean, we have so many people that are so beat down because of guilt, so condemning because of judgment, and lives just laid to waste all around the planet, regardless of what belief system they're in, because all of them, including Christianity, is an attempt to try to gain something that they do not have with God. And that is a complete slap in the face of what the prophets had to say about the work of Christ. And I love and respect salvation. But it is the saving of the soul is the only thing. It's not the spirit, not the person themselves as God views us, because that has all been made absolutely, absolutely clean without fault, and has attained to that position that Jesus said would have to happen in Matthew chapter 5, that we would have to attain perfection, absolute perfection in the eyes of God, if we had any hope of relationship with God at all, that human race would have to attain perfection. Now, that perfection has become a gift to us. Whether you believe or don't believe, you are perfect in the eyes of God. I love letting people know that. It's one of the things I really enjoy. I don't even bring it up if somebody doesn't have questions about it, because they're probably better off without me trying to untrain them something that they have not been trained in. But man, I tell you, when somebody has those questions, it's a wonderful part of my life to be able to inform somebody who is struggling, trying to be right with God, and let them know you're already right with God. You're already perfect. Now, your understanding about that could be perfected. Your understanding about what God views about you. And here's the thing, Glenn, that became so clear to me was that I'm not trying to understand God and what he does, how he does it. I would never, ever, ever to profess to know what God does or how he does it. He's God. I mean, I'm a human being. But I do believe that I know what God thinks about me, and I know what he thinks about every other human being on the face of the earth, because that is the true understanding that comes out of the gospel through Jesus Christ, is that reality that no man has to ever, ever struggle to be accepted by God ever again. No one. Now, the reality of that is our salvation. That's what puts us mentally and emotionally at peace. You see, spiritually, we are already at peace with God. There is no angry God anymore. There is no God out punishing somebody. There is no God making someone sick or saying, okay, take that, you know, and that'll teach you. And so many people are use those things as tools. And any time that there's an accident or incident in life, you know, how many times will you hear, well, you know, God's trying to teach you something. Well, that could make you wind up absolutely hating God. I know at my mother's death, that's what I was told at 14, that, you know, that God, that there was a lesson God was trying to teach us. It's like, you know, if this is his method of teaching, I'm not sure I want to know anything about him. You know, find another way to teach rather than killing people. You know, I just don't know why people think that for God to be able to teach, that the Holy Spirit to be able to teach, that he has to kill people, maim people, destroy people's lives to teach them something. And then we turn around and say we believe that the Holy Spirit is the great teacher. But no, we don't. We believe that pain and suffering is the great teacher. And the only thing it does, pain and suffering does, if you have the mentality that it's God doing it, is make you bitter and resentful. And not just toward God, but toward life. And that's what makes the things that are difficult in this life unbearable, is that we have to compound it with believing that it's God that's done it. Trying to do something good for us, he punishes us. And that mentality is so destructive. And it's one that I'm going to look very much forward to addressing during our convention time here in Houston in November.
Coming up November 12th, ladies and gentlemen, through the 15th, the entire book of Hebrews will be dealt with by Michael, not to mention all the fellowship and the camaraderie and the other teachers that will have a chance to speak there. But if at all possible, you want to make sure that you are in Houston, Texas. We've got about 10 rooms left available in our block, and people need to get online at gospelrevolution.com. Information, you just click on the convention information right at the top of the homepage. You can call the office number in Houston that's listed at the website to talk to Michael personally. Get yourself in Houston, Texas next month, or in November. November 12th through the 15th for the second annual Gospel Revolution Convention. We need to come up with an overarching theme besides just the book of Hebrews. We'll think of something. Maybe somebody has some suggestions.
Absolutely.
You can email us your suggestions for a theme at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. Well, our time has expired. And,
it has.
Michael, thank you for your time. And
thank you, Glenn.
Insight. As always, and we want
and
to
thank
also
you for yours.
Participating in a big way on this edition of Glenn Klein Online. We also want to thank Sean O'Halloran for producing and engineering and call screening this webcast. And we will do it in 1 week's time. Happy birthday, Hazel!
Yes, happy birthday, Hazel!
And I want to wish my brother Steve a happy birthday. It's his birthday tomorrow. And
happy birthday, Steve.
We will continue on, ladies and gentlemen, and want to hear from you during the course of the week at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. Let us hear from you, and let us see you in Houston in November. Until next time, this is Glenn Klein Online saying, Shalom, everybody!